Insights.
This is Akashvani. In the program Insights, now we bring you a discussion on digital bricks shaping a resilient and inclusive digital future. The participants are Atul Aneja, international affairs expert, and Arjun J. Chaudhary, anchor.
I'm joined by Shri Atul Aneja, who's a strategic analyst, and today's topic of discussion is on digital bricks, India's vision for a resilient and inclusive digital future in the context of Digital Bricks Forum and the Expo in Pune. Now, all of this sounds very technical, Atul Aneja ji, but for the benefit of our listeners on Akashvani, do tell us what is significance of this meeting, and once again, a warm welcome to you on the program.
Thank you so much, Arjun. You see, the entire domain of human interaction is moved into the digital age now. I mean, as we talk, I was navigating on my phone on GPS how to reach here. You know, our communication, social media, and in fact, entire system of governance, for example, our financial interaction, it's the lifeblood of our present day existence. So digital domain and bridging the digital divide is absolutely, absolutely essential. Now, over here, we have a hierarchy, you know, the control over digital and especially data flows, and data flows being the feedstock or lifeblood for artificial intelligence, etc., has been so much Western centered. So what happens with BRICS is that it's a shift or a growing shift from the developed world to the emerging economies, and from the emerging economies, which are core, which will include the key members of the BRICS countries, to the global south at large. So I think this meeting, which is taking place in Pune, is part of this process of shift, of democratization of the digital age, I would say that way. And here, if you look at the competence level of some of the key BRICS countries, for example, you have India, of course, software superpower and more, and then you have Russia, and then you have China. So if you pull in the resources, and I think that's the spirit of the Pune meeting, is to collaborate and pull in our strengths and then distribute that along the global south. I think this is a very, very fundamental shift that is taking place. The Pune meeting can be historic if it leads to a much bigger decentralization of the digital domain.
So before this historic meeting of BRICS nations, India has been an early adopter of digitization, and a lot of that was focused on banking. And you also have the concept of world banking away from the traditional World Bank, now into a BRICS bank as well. But now we're talking about ICT, information and communication technologies, where member nations are coming together. From the strategic standpoint, how is this so important?
This is very important because we had a unipolar world with only one superpower, which happened since 1991, if you want to put a dateline on that, with the collapse of the Soviet Union. But that world has changed, and its power has fragmented. And it has fragmented upon what we call various poles, which are civilizational states, essentially. And so we have entered the domain of a multipolar world. And since it has got fragmented, since many poles have emerged, this requires new rules of governance and new rules of how the digital world is to be governed. That is very, very important, so that there is digital justice, if you like, which is done, and it is not monopolized and financialized by a few companies sitting in Silicon Valley. So that's the connection with the larger geopolitical shift which is taking place globally. And what we are seeing in Pune is an adaptation to this new world order, in a way. And that's where the democratization of the digital domain is very, very essential, so that there is digital justice, as I said earlier.
So India being an early adopter of digitization, so now we have the concept of a digital public infrastructure and the governance being based on that as well, because so much is being done online now without person-to-person meeting. You know, the interface is there, but it's all digital, based on documentation, based on checks and balances, which are all digital in nature. So how do you see this being very citizen-centric? Because after all, the delivery of the service is to the people of the country.
Because what we see in India, for example, the digital public infrastructure, you use your financial transactions the way it goes on at a very, very micro level. And that is something fantastic, and that is also extremely cost effective. So the element which India brings to the table is a high technology or quality technology at a very low price. We believe in volumes. And that is why this Indian experiment with this UPI system and the DPI which we have had, or your Digi Lockers and others, I mean, during COVID we had the Arogya Setu, you know, the health delivery. It's an example, or it's a role model for the rest of the developing world or the global south. So I think what India has achieved is something fantastic, which is going to affect, or which can affect lives of millions, if not billions of people. So this is where India goes into this very approach, and the Prime Minister has talked about it, that we go in for digitization, but also a human-centric digitization, that it brings, it improves the quality of life of any ordinary citizen in India. And now with bridging of the digital or pooling in of digital resources, as we find in Pune, maybe affecting lives of millions and in fact billions across Africa, across Latin America, in fact affecting more than half the world. So that is where the cutting edge contribution of India will come in. And I think we need to build on it. And I think that's what's happening in Pune, where you're collectivizing it. You're sort of pooling in other countries' strengths. India didn't have that kind of hardware strength. So if we have other BRICS countries coming in and pooling in, maybe China, maybe Russia, if they do it, or maybe Brazil does it, then we, our ecosystem becomes the basic theme. It becomes resilient. And that is the core objective, that you have a resilient infrastructure on ICT. And which is also, in a way, if you look at it in the political terms, it leads to digital sovereignty, which is so very, very important in today's days and age. And that's why I think we got to go beyond the networking aspect, the sharing of data, but actually, Arjun, having our own data centers. That is the root of our digital sovereignty.
So when you talk about sovereignty, away from the financial impact, which is tied to the economics of the nation as well, we're also talking about defense here. Cybersecurity, not only in terms of protecting the individual, but protecting the nation as well, because so much of warfare that we are seeing right now, especially in the Middle East, is being fought remotely. And all of that is, again, based on information. How do you see this as an equally important part when we talk about digital public infrastructure and also part of governance?
It is part of the ecosystem, an essential part of the ecosystem, that you secure your data. Your critical infrastructure has to be saved. And the power of data centers, as I'm observing this Iran war, one of the early attacks of the Iranian missiles was in the Amazon data center in Bahrain. So you realize that you blind everything if you hit at data centers. So you got to protect that. Then second thing is you have to make your system unhackable. So that's where quantum computing becomes a very, very essential part of your digital sovereignty. And I hope, and I'm certain that this would be a very important element of, as we connect with each other, to also make our system unhackable, and quantum computing, enough resources are pumped into it so that our digital infrastructure, it becomes completely secure.
Atul Aneja ji, when you talk about digital information, it also has a great deal of value. You mentioned about Google and building data centers, including investments in India. There is also news coming out that the same company would buy a bankrupt company, maybe an aviation company, but they want to buy the information because you have emails and you have all kinds of internal memos and documentation. All of that is equally important because now businesses are feeding on information in order to create new algorithms, how to work that business digitally. How do you see that aspect vis-a-vis privacy as well for the citizens of the country?
First of all, securing your data and preventing any data leaks, because data is your feedstock for, let's say, making an app. So if you want to build parallel apps, then you need your own data and your own algorithms. What will show first? We've seen protests here and how algorithms are used to promote a certain line. And that creates a political and a sovereignty issue as well. So you need your own digital sovereignty, as we talked about. Corporations need it as well. Now comes the question of privacy. Now, these are issues which need to be tackled, that what are the red lines where a citizen's rights are protected while public security is also maintained. Now, these are thin lines which have to be debated and need such a kind of a global treaty or a global legal regime which regulates AI and other aspects of the digital world. That's where we are entering into that domain of rulemaking right now. And I do hope the Pune meeting also shed some light into what should be the new rules.
It's very interesting because you spoke about artificial intelligence and now AI has these agents who work for a person who's programming them to do something based on that algorithm. And a lot of that is also directed towards fraud. When we talk about diagnostics and surgery being conducted using these tools, which are now available, again, it's based on 3G, 5G technology, which is a very important resource for the nation. Also, equally important for our defense capabilities. When you talk about the way warfare is being undertaken right now, how do you see these vital resources also being protected as a form of alliance and collaborative efforts between nations? Because these are very important resources for each and every one of these nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China.
You see, there are certain dimensions. You talked about 5G, so there doesn't have to be any redundancy if you're doing a surgery, for example. I think that's something which can give value, especially in developing countries where, you know, doctors may not be available in remote areas or in the field of education. I think so that's where I would see the plus side of AI, let's say. So that's one dimension which is fine. But there are several others. If you have any specific element, I'd like to talk about that. You talked about surgeries, you talked about health.
Talking about the spectrum, the resource, which is so important to drive all these technologies that we are speaking about, then there's the aspect of employment, which you have been talking about.
Yes.
So employment has to be skilled employment. You should be able to use the tools in order to, say, be more effective in a surgical procedure and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
If you're going to be targeting munitions at a target, then, you know, you're going to be more effective if you have ICT along with you. But the vital resource would be the spectrum, would it not?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something which you have to keep in mind, the exploitation or leveraging of the spectrum. And that's something which needs to be understood in much greater detail than what it is being done right now. So I think that's so many aspects of AI and the AI revolution. We're in the early stages of it to make it what is the intention of the Pune meeting, which is benefiting the ordinary citizen of the global south.
But I'm sure our listeners would like to know the impact on employment, because after all, these are tools for the benefit of mankind, humankind, but it should not be replacing them totally, because you do require people who are skilled using this information and communication technologies across sectors. And there is multiple opinions. So you have the billionaire lobby saying that it'll create a new set of employment. And then you have another lobby saying that it'll crush jobs and it'll lead to redundancy, as you mentioned earlier. Which view would you take, and how do you see the government moving forward in its governance?
In China, I went to a factory, huge factory, and there was something like a control room. They were showcasing Industry 4.0, automated manufacturing. 12 people only running this huge factory. And what happens to the others who could have otherwise been employed? Where do you get the balance right? So this employment is going to be a huge issue. Are we going to have an army of robots? And then what happens to the inequality question? It's great for the billionaires who are making their money. But if it is causing social unrest and mass unemployment, then that's something which has to be thought through. How do you get the balance right? And that's the challenge for governments, for example. Even when you talk of educating people, skilled people, I mean, if you see something like Claude today, Claude is doing the coding which a coder would have done earlier. So in banks and in big organizations, they're shedding people, with coders, because they're not required. You have the machine doing it. So, I mean, it's what kind of skills would be really employable, would be workable, is another aspect. What we thought were very skilled jobs are no longer going to be that skilled jobs. So those are the areas I think we require a debate. And it's not a one size fit all. I think we've got to differentiate the application of AI depending on geographies, level of development, and your basic education level. And you cannot impose a one single rule for the entire globe. It has to be a very differentiated kind of a debate, and a very sophisticated debate which is required, which takes the benefits, but also makes sure that it benefits a majority. And that's important. These are ethical questions which are coming in big time with this.
Well, thank you so much, Atul Aneja ji, for talking to us in depth about digital bricks and what India's vision is for a resilient and inclusive digital future in the context of the Digital BRICS Forum and Expo, which is taking place in Pune. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on digital BRICS, shaping a resilient and inclusive digital future. The participants were Atul Aneja, international affairs expert, and Arjun J. Chaudhary, anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on a mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official.
Insights.